From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Oh, oh, hey-o, hey-o, ya, ya, ya.
Live from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles, we are breaking with convention, power, protest, and the presidency. Today on the show, a look at the Democrats' Warbucks pipeline, the Raytheon Corporation, and National Missile Defense. We'll talk to Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, a dissident Democrat. And how democratic is the Democrats' convention? We'll talk to workers fighting to unionize a hotel being used by the DNC this week in Los Angeles, run by one of Al Gore's major contributors. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez with news headlines. Thousands of demonstrators ended their march through downtown Los Angeles on Sunday afternoon with a rally in front of the Staples Center, the site of the Democratic National Convention. With helicopters buzzing overhead, scores of police officers in riot gear watched through the glass faceplates on their helmets as peaceful marchers demanded a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal on death row in Pennsylvania. They also called for an end to the death penalty in the United States. About 40 self-described anarchists clad in black tennis shoes, black jeans, black bandanas shrouding their faces, jeered police and shouted, LAPD, go away, racist, sexist, anti-gay.
TV networks have given George W. Bush more favorable coverage than Al Gore, both during the GOP convention and throughout the presidential race, according to a study being released today by the Center for Media and Public Affairs. The study examined 72 stories that aired during the Republican National Convention of July 31 to August 3rd on the ABC, CBS, and NBC Evening News. It found that 60% of people quoted in stories praised Bush's policies, political skills, or personal character, while 80% of people quoted criticized Gore. Coverage this year is the inverse of the 1992 and 96 presidential elections, when President Clinton received much more positive coverage than his opponents, the center said.
And just two blocks from the Democratic National Convention site, thousands of homeless people and their advocates are staging a gathering of their own. Homeless activist Ted Hayes, standing in the Dome Village he founded in 1993, said all those Democrats over there are so myopic they don't realize how gluttonous and ugly they look to those of us in poverty. Assembled on a parking lot, the village has more than 20 fiberglass domes that provide housing and support services for local homeless people. Throughout the week, the homeless convention organizers plan to hold vigils around the Staples Center, lead tours of Skid Row, and hold forums on corporate globalization and the morality of homelessness. According to the National Coalition for the Homeless, there are about 700,000 people who are homeless each night in the United States.
An activist dressed in a pink pig costume dumped 4 tons of animal manure from a truck Saturday in front of a hotel housing guests attending the convention. Police arrested the animal rights activist and impounded the truck. At the Wilshire Grand Hotel, about 10 people from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals stood on the sidewalk as the activist dumped the manure in the hotel driveway. Some wore the same full-body pig costumes and carried placards that read, "Meat is murder." City workers and hotel employees cleaned up.
And this international news, Iraq said yesterday U.S. and British planes bombed a train station in the south on Saturday night, wounding a number of civilians in the second straight night of raids on the area. Britain denied the claims and said it had attacked a missile site that was targeting its aircraft. An Iraqi army general said the planes hit the town's rail station, wounding 3 civilians, damaging several houses. A raid on Friday struck a government warehouse in Samawa, killing 2 civilians and wounding 19 others.
And this news from Tripoli. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez said yesterday that the current level of petroleum prices is fair and called on members of the Organization of Oil Exporting Countries to resist pressures for lower prices. Chavez, whose country currently holds OPEC's rotating presidency, was speaking at a joint press conference with Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi after their meeting here Sunday.
And Cuban President Fidel Castro marked his 74th birthday this weekend with a highly symbolic appearance at a patriotic ceremony in a new, quote, anti-imperialist square built opposite the U.S. diplomatic mission in Havana. In power since his 1959 revolution, Castro presided at a tribute to the graduation of 4,000 medical students and a collective avowal of the revolution. In his speech, Castro reminded his audience there were only 6,000 doctors in Cuba in 1959, of whom half left for the United States. Now there are more than 67,000 doctors and Cuban medics are present around the developing world.
Presidential candidates.
Corporations call the shots.
Come on, y'all rich people, and have a good time. Well, there's two parties that we love so dear. We want a president to last for 4 years. Oh, but we don't care which one you choose, because we own the Democrat Party and Republicrats too. Come on now.
Nomination.
We choose the choices, now the choice is up to you. We are the
corporations.
We're gonna celebrate no matter which party you choose. Let's party now. It's time for the ruling class to come together to increase our wealth beyond our.
And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center at Patriotic Hall in Los Angeles, California. You've just been listening to Andrew Thompson in a song created for Barefoot Minstrel News, an activist vaudeville radio on KMUD in California. And we've been sent music pieces from all over the country to play for the conventions, and we thank Andrew for that. Well, this again, an unprecedented broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we broadcast on community radio stations around the country, on public access cable stations around the country, on Dish Network, channel 9415, and that's run by Free Speech TV. As well, we are videocasting and audio streaming on the World Wide Web at democracynow.org. That's democracynow.org. Well, Juan, it's been quite a weekend, even before the convention starts tonight.
Yes, and here we are in Los Angeles. The last convention here, Democratic Convention, was in 1960, the convention that nominated John F. Kennedy. And we find here in Los Angeles, as many of the 45% of the population here, the Latinos of this city, like to remind people, part of the historic old Mexican homeland where right now we have six of the major cities in the United States, six of the top 10 cities in population in the United States are in the old Mexican homeland, that being Los Angeles, San Diego, Phoenix, Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio. And of course, this Los Angeles is a very different place from 1960. It's very different from the last time there was a national attention focused on the city in the 84 Olympics. At that time, Latinos were 32% of the city. Today, of the county, of Los Angeles County, today Latinos are 45% of Los Angeles County. Back in 1984, there were 1.1 million people living in poverty in Los Angeles County. Today, there are 1.9 million people living in poverty. And back in 1984, there were 18,000 children in foster care in Los Angeles County. Today, in the year 2000, there are 48,000 children in foster care. So Los Angeles has changed in some ways for the better, but in many ways, not being paid attention to much by the delegates at the convention, for the worse.
And the power certainly has shifted when it comes to who is in control in California overall. You have the white leadership for many years moving to black leadership, and now Latino leadership is really the story of the day in California.
And we'll be looking at that quite a bit over the coming week, how much of that is being addressed at this convention and how much of it is not.
Well, we're going to start off by talking about a major event that took place on Sunday night, just before this convention begins tonight. It's one of many events that are taking place here. Some are saying that the reason these conventions are now so long, when we know exactly who is going to be coronated, both with the Republicans and now with the Democrats, there's no decision, platform battles aren't going on right now. For this four-day period, it's about raising money from morning until night. It's the opportunity for politicians to dig into others' pockets deeply. Last night in Los Angeles, there was a major party for the Democrats, the Blue Dog Democrats. It was a party that was sponsored by many corporations, including Philip Morris, as well as Raytheon. And that party happened on the pier at Santa Monica. And today we're going to talk about Raytheon. This is the sounds of the party.
What's that?
Raytheon is one of the smallest.
That's fine. Absolutely. They're a large employer in the state. Probably 4,000 or 5,000 employees in California. It's probably good that they're here.
Hadn't thought about it.
You don't have to figure it right now.
Oh, sure.
Politics is a game of give and take. And sometimes you have to sleep with people who don't really want to sleep with.
What do you think of the fact that Raytheon is one of the listed sponsors of tonight's party?
Well, I think that if big business, you know, regardless of what else they have done, wants to spend their money for a worthy cause, I believe that we should let them do it. I'm sure they're supporting the Republicans, too.
And we want to thank the Independent Media Center for that videotape as one of the reporters here got into the party. Thank you to Jackie Sohn. Well, in Los Angeles, this major bash on the waterfront for the so-called Blue Dog Democrats, that's the term for conservative Democrats in Congress, headed by Jim Breaux of Louisiana. The hosts of the party include major corporations like cigarette giant Philip Morris, Pepsi-Cola, as well as the major arms manufacturer, Raytheon. Raytheon is a Massachusetts-based company specializing in missiles, military equipment, electronic information systems, and aircraft. It reported nearly $20 billion in revenue last year. In addition to being a major supplier of weapons in the United States military, Raytheon supplies weapons to the Indonesian Army and other nations with terrible human rights records. It's also a major manufacturer of components of anti-personnel landmines.
You know, Raytheon has been investigated and brought to court repeatedly for illegally obtaining documents from the U.S. Army, spying on competitors, inflating contracts, selling equipment to Pakistan despite U.S. sanctions on the country, bribing Brazilian politicians, and failing to properly test weapons components. Raytheon is also a major contributor to both the Democratic and Republican parties. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, Raytheon spent more than $1.5 million on lobbying in 1998. During that election cycle, it donated more than $82,000 in soft money to the Democratic Party and more than $92,000 to the Republican Party. It is also helping carry out tests of the Star Wars missile defense system. Reports in the New York Times have suggested that researchers rigged these tests and lied about their results.
Well, today we're going to take a closer look at the Raytheon Corporation and its support for the Democratic Party, as well as the National Missile Defense System. Raytheon is one of the big four NMD contractors throwing money around here in Los Angeles. And this issue of national missile defense was one of the major debates happening around the Democratic platform pushed through by Vice President Al Gore.
The platform draft states, Al Gore and the Democratic Party support the development of the technology for a limited national missile defense system that will be able to defend the U.S. against a missile attack from proliferant states. A decision to deploy such a system should be based on four criteria: the nature of the threat, the feasibility of the technology, the cost, and the overall impact on our national security, including arms control.
Well, we're joined by a few people to talk about national missile defense and Raytheon. We're going to begin with Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, who is here as a delegate at the Democratic Convention, a Democrat from Ohio. He also helped lead the Progressive Caucus effort to modify the Democratic platform plank in their language dealing with missile defense. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much. A pleasure to join you.
So, this issue of the national missile defense that is in the Democratic Party platform, that might surprise some people.
Well, actually, I was part of a group of progressive Democrats who went to the meeting of the platform committee, which happened to be held in my district in Cleveland, Ohio. And we challenged this idea of even having anything like this in a Democratic platform. Unfortunately, the decision had already been made to keep the platform proposals intact, and so it is in the platform. When you were reciting earlier the list of the criteria that would be used to make the decision on the deployment of the missile defense system, nature of the threat, feasibility, cost, and impact on arms control, I mean, if that really was the basis of such a decision, then there wouldn't be any new Star Wars II boondoggle facing the American people. The nature of the threat is an internal one. Like Pogo, we have met the enemy and he is us. This is a program that's in search of an enemy. They're looking for somebody to name the enemy and then use that to justify the buildup of nuclear arms. And as a consequence, we're looking at a new arms race. And for what? I mean, either this is totally a scam, which you have to realize in Washington is a good possibility, or it's a cynical effort to try to polarize the election on military issues and scare the American people. Either way, it is wrong, it's wrong policy, and it's wrong for the future of this country.
Explain what national missile defense is, what the system
well,
is.
Well, the idea is a bullet hitting a bullet in space, intercepting a bullet that's supposed to come our way. Now, the technology doesn't work. There's been several attempts to test the technology. One of the tests resulted in accusations of fraud and cover-up being leveled against the Pentagon and contractors, allegations which over 50 members of Congress, working with me and a few others, wrote to the FBI and asked them to investigate. We're still waiting for a response. But this is a very serious matter. There's an effort here to, I'll say the word, steal money from the American people, from the taxpayers. And $60 billion is what's at stake here, at least. But it's not only that. It's if we accelerate a new arms race here, we're looking at spending the future treasure of this nation. Gore Vidal today pointed out that in a period of a few years, trillions of dollars have been spent on these programs. We need to take a strong stand for peace, for nonproliferation, and for an appropriate approach to dealing with the taxpayers' money. This is a waste of taxpayers' money.
Well, I'd like to ask, you heard Gore Vidal talk about he dubbed it the Ronald Reagan Memorial Defense System, and how has it been possible for Star Wars to survive through so many administrations, Republican and Democratic?
Anyone here ever seen the movie The Alien? You know, just when you thought The Alien was pretty much finished, all of a sudden, you know, the alien comes out of a compartment at you again. This is what this missile defense system is like. It was dead, it's been dead, but all of a sudden, $60 billion. So we have to realize that the alien is out there, but the alien's also inside the craft of the United States, and we have to keep challenging it and talk about principles. We have to stay for peace, we have to stay for nuclear nonproliferation, and diplomacy which I think that's what the State Department is for. At least it ought to pretend to be for diplomacy instead of putting a nuclear war on the next agenda.
Congressman Kucinich, you talk about reviving the ghosts of Reagan, but this is in the Democratic platform.
Look, not with despite the efforts that we've made, it's in the Democratic platform. I am actually going to be going throughout the convention this week, asking Democrats who believe very strongly in peace to sign a pledge that this program ought to be stopped and supporting the position the program ought to be stopped. I happen to believe, by the way, that the position that I hold on this issue is a position that's shared by a lot of Democrats across the country, and it's a very centrist, if you want to use the word in another meaning, position, as is universal health care, increasing the minimum wage, and fair trade. These are all amendments which we tried to incorporate in the Democratic platform. Now, we weren't successful, but the effort will continue, and it will continue throughout this year and the next few years and as long as we're around, because a platform isn't just a document for a week in Los Angeles. It's a statement of principle for a party long into the future. And I think that we need to take a strong stand and say that it is not sufficient to start a new arms race. We should not ask our children to have to go back to the duck and cover drills, which many of us who grew up in the 50s had to experience. There's no need for it. Think about this. We just negotiated the Congress did, not with my vote, negotiated a vote for a permanent trade relationship with China. That's on one hand. On the other hand, we're going towards a program with this missile defense, which is causing China to look at increasing their arms spending. And you know what? They have a lot of money to do it because we have a $70 billion trade deficit this year alone.
Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, we have to break for stations to identify themselves. When we come back, we'll look at what I guess might be driving the national missile defense system, and that is the corporations that are here out in all their glory at the Democratic National Convention, as they were for the Republicans in Philadelphia. We'll talk about Raytheon Corporation in particular. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles. We'll be back in a minute.
My country isn't free. We build our military from sea to sea. Spread like a virus blight with all our taxes might. From cops and guards who shoot on sight to the weapons industry. Our bombs are smart and fast. Our tanks are built to last longer than schools. Behind a prison fence languish the dissidents who speak of peace and common sense. Rights overruled.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We're broadcasting live from the Los Angeles downtown Independent Media Center, which is in Patriotic Hall. We are just blocks away from the Staples Center. In fact, at the Shadow Convention today, which also took place at Patriotic Hall, Senator Russell Feingold, who is a delegate at the convention, senator from Wisconsin, said it's quite appropriate when you look at the level of corporations and their involvement in these conventions that the convention center itself should be named after a major corporation, Staples. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we talk about another major corporation, Raytheon, a major contributor to the Democratic Party. Juan?
And before we get into Raytheon, I'd like to ask Congressman Kucinich about the card that he is distributing for the creation of a Department of Peace in the United States. Could you tell us about that?
That concept of a Department of Peace is not a new concept, but it's one that we are, that myself and a number of supporters are taking to this convention in the form of a card that asks people to imagine a Department of Peace. And here's what this is about. we're in a time where we still have with us the thought of nuclear war, the thought of a nuclear arms race. Again, we need to begin to change the consciousness of this country. And that consciousness shift starts with considering the possibility of having nonviolence as an organizing principle in our society for domestic as well as foreign policy. And the way to start it is to start with the structure of the government, because the structure of the government communicates a consciousness to the nation. And we need to start looking at what we're about as a nation, with $300 billion a year going towards the perpetuation of a military-industrial complex.
I didn't see Department of Peace as one of the planks in the Democratic platform.
Well, actually,
but maybe I read it too quickly.
Well, wait a minute, Amy. Actually, if you look at this card, the card says, a future souvenir of the Democratic National Convention. So don't miss the fine print with all these communications, because this one says, this is a message for the future, but we're planting the seeds now here in Los Angeles. And it's a good place to do it, because I think there is a receptivity for all of the cynicism that is out there, for some of the despair that we see. There's a receptivity to new ideas and to refining old ideas and to celebrating the potential of a democracy. And so, as much as many of us might be very disappointed with the platform today, we need to be aware of our own power to change things and our ability to transform the consciousness of this nation. And if we believe in that and work towards it, this country will be transformed, and we'll be part of it.
There are a lot of issues we want to address, among them the golden parachute that just went to with the Republican vice presidential candidate, Dick Cheney. We're talking $20 million from Halliburton, not to mention stocks and all that. But before we do that, we've said we're going to talk about Raytheon, where a big party just took place last night on the Santa Monica Pier, sponsored by Raytheon and other corporations. Bill Hartung is on the line with us from New York, senior fellow at the World Policy Institute, and he's just completed a new study on Raytheon. We welcome you to Democracy Now!, Bill Hartung.
Yes, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Bill, can you hear us?
Yes.
We're going to try to go to Bill in a second, but we're also joined in the studio here at the Independent Media Center by Peter. Peter is the representative of Peace Action in California. Peter Fehrenbach has been leading forums around the country, rallies in the last few weeks around the issue of the National Missile Defense System. Can you talk about them, Peter?
Yeah, we've been undertaking a missile stop tour over the last 3 weeks, and we've had three 50-foot Trident nuclear missiles working their way to this convention across the state of California, basically doing a press conference a day outside of the offices of different representatives. And essentially, I think there's a conscious effort to bury the issues of what's going on with nuclear weapons right now, and it's a little difficult to bury a 50-foot nuclear missile that's parked in front of your office surrounded by TV cameras, and that's been the function of our missile stop tour. The missiles will be part of the march tomorrow. I wanted to say something about where Star Wars 2 is coming from, which is really the same place that Star Wars 1 came from. And, you know, I absolutely agree with Representative Kucinich about the impact of the money and the corporate influence. But during the 1980s, the Reagan administration's plan was to develop the machinery to initiate a first strike nuclear war and then to be able to defend against any possible retaliation. And that's where Star Wars was born. Now, the politicians realized long ago that first strike nuclear war was not a big vote getter, so they called it a missile shield and things of this nature. Now, it's very important. I've been working on disarmament issues for 20 years, and it's very important to look at all of the different aspects. And right now, the United States is actually spending about $35 billion a year on nuclear weapons. It's more than the Cold War average. And you have to ask why. And if you look at the weapon systems that they're building, it gives you the answer. There's currently in production the Trident nuclear missile. Now, back in the 1960s, in Dr. Strangelove era, you could drop a nuclear missile in a city and you would kill everyone. But that doesn't work for first strike. The Trident missile's express purpose is to hit a target which is very small, within, call it 100 feet. So right now, the Trident missile is in production, and you have to ask why. Out at Los Alamos, they've just produced a new nuclear warhead, and its function is to basically burrow into the ground, find a cavity, and when it finds that underground cavity, explode.
And you have to ask, well, why are they making a warhead like that? And if you go back to the Gulf War or the Gulf Massacre, you'll get your answer. General Kadish, the head of the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, stated very plainly on PBS just the other night that what they want to achieve with Star Wars right now is the ability to basically maintain the latitude for action in a future intervention, where in the event of a Gulf War, what they don't want is for Saddam Hussein to be basically able to say that if you intervene here, we will launch a missile at your country. And by building both the ability to hit his underground arsenal and to retaliate against any possible reaction, what they're essentially doing is building the capacity to control events in future conflicts that way. So it's still about developing a first strike nuclear strategy. And to the best of my knowledge, the United States is the only country which has refused to renounce using nuclear weapons first in a conflict.
Peter Fehrenbach, can you tell us about the whistleblower who is not with the Raytheon Corporation, but another corporation, TRW? There was a piece written about her in the New York Times talking about the missile defense system, but I understand she can't talk right now.
Yeah, this is very interesting, and I think ultimately rather telling. I wish we were joined by Dr. Neera Schwartz tonight. She is was formerly a senior engineer at TRW working on missile defense, and essentially her work led her to the conclusion that it couldn't work, and that in fact we could not distinguish between a warhead and a decoy. And when she went to her superiors at TRW with that, she was fired. Over the last several years, she has been painstakingly, with her own money, pursuing a whistleblower lawsuit on this issue. And now that it's started to come to the surface, largely because of the leadership of Representative Kucinich and others who have called for a fraud investigation, there is a very serious effort to clamp down on her speech. She was going to be joined by us this evening. However, her attorney said that she could not. A few weeks ago, her attorney was visited by representatives of the Defense Security Services who essentially were charging her with leaking classified data. But other people have referred to that as essentially, Theodore Postol of MIT has referred to it as a transparent case of intimidation. Representative Ed Markey of Massachusetts says, obviously hits are being put out on anyone who betrays this high-tech code of silence. So unfortunately, we're not able to bring her here because that might jeopardize her whistleblower lawsuit. And Dr. Schwartz herself said, they're trying to kill the messenger. Right now, the court case is the only way to bring the issue to justice, and the nation needs an independent evaluation of the project. Otherwise, we're all being taken for a ride.
Well, I'd like to ask you the same question I asked the congressman. We're at the Democratic National Convention. What has been the difference in approach of the Democratic Party to this issue of a second Star Wars and of nuclear weapons in general, and what have been the essential differences between them and the Republicans, if any?
Well, the difference is that in the Democratic Party there are leaders like Representative Kucinich, and there are none in the Republican Party. But, you know, in all honesty, I think essentially there are three things driving Star Wars right now. And one is the money, which is, you know, the program is conservatively estimated at costing $60 billion. So if they're having a party on Santa Monica Pier, they're headed towards a $60 billion party. That's one thing that's driving it. The other thing which is driving it is, I think, the Pentagon perspective, which is ultimately about maintaining the ability to intervene with impunity. But the third thing which is driving it is a different type of politics. And I think that essentially they've tried to insulate Al Gore from charges of being soft on defense. And right now they're in a bind, and this is why I think things are very difficult for Dr. Schwartz, because they're very afraid that if these issues come out right now, then the Gore campaign will have the difficult choice of saying, okay, we're going to go ahead with tests that apparently have been faked, or to come out against missile defense. And their fear is that that would result in umpteen thousand 30-second commercials saying Al Gore is soft on defense.
Peter Fehrenbach, director of California Peace Action Education Fund. We're also joined, we hope, on the line by Bill Hartung from New York. Now, I just want to say it is truly a miracle what we're accomplishing right here at the Independent Media Center on the sixth floor of Patriotic Hall as we jerry-rig an incredible studio with a team of people that are working both on the radio side and on the television side as we televise the revolution, as we televise what's being said to cable access stations around the country, as well as the Dish Network. So we're attempting now to reach, just through the simple phone line and our board, Bill Hartung in New York. Can you hear us, Bill? Ah, wonderful. Yes, you never sounded so good. Well, that's great. Now, you've done a report on the corporation, one of the corporations that are what Peter is talking about, and that is the fueling the whole push right now for the National Missile Defense System. We want to talk about Raytheon. What have you found?
Of course, but in a situation where you have, in terms of special interest money, the Democratic Party has managed in the past 18 months to raise $118 million compared to the Republicans, $136 million. So there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of difference in terms of their ability to raise money, just a question of the sources of the money. While we have Congressman Kucinich and Cynthia McKinney and many others who are in Congress, they basically are dissidents with no ability to affect the actual policy. So
I would take exception to that.
Okay.
Because
Congressman Kucinich.
Because one person does make a difference. Cynthia McKinney and I and a few other members actually were responsible in generating a vote that blocked the expansion of the air war in Kosovo in a tie vote. We were able to block Fast Track from coming to the floor by working on the floor of the House. We were able to stop repeal of the clean air regs 3 years ago. So one person does make a difference in the House of Representatives. It's not a fixed deal. It's not like everything's all cut and dried. And we need to tell people that. I'm there, sir. I'm on that floor. And I can tell you that you can be a force for change. You just have to stay dedicated with it, and you cannot accept anything as a foregone conclusion, because no matter the hegemony of TRW, Boeing, Raytheon, and all these other defense contractors, the people's representatives can still make a difference there. I want anyone who's listening to be aware of that. This thing isn't as though it's just totally fixed and you can't change it.
But do you think
people need to know that?
Do you think having Al Gore in the White House would make that difference? And why would you support him over Ralph Nader?
I think it's important that there be individuals in the Congress who can continue to raise their voice no matter who the President of the United States is. You know, there are things that you can recommend Al Gore to be President of the United States, and there are good things you can say about the other candidates. As a member of the Congress, I see myself as being a co-equal participant in that government. That's the way the Congress, the government of the United States was set up. Unfortunately, Congress has not been strong enough in its insistence on the rights of the people, and that's our job. I'm going to cast a vote for president. I'm going to be voting for Gore. Do I agree with him on many of these issues? Absolutely not. But my role is to try to widen the appeal of the Democratic Party and make it more relevant, and I think we're doing that with taking the stand on issues.
Quick question. This big news this weekend exposed by the New York Times of the Republican vice presidential nominee Dick Cheney getting $20 million as a golden parachute from Halliburton, the largest oil services corporation in the world, which he has been CEO of for the last 5 years.
Well, he worked 5 years for that. I mean, look, you know, let's give credit where credit's due. And in addition to that, there were a lot of people who didn't need their health care anymore and didn't need those lower-wage jobs they were working at. So he worked for that money, and, you know, he ought to be given credit.
Also, some of the biggest deals he landed as head of Halliburton were a deal with Petrobras in Brazil, and the other is a big deal rebuilding Kosovo, though he supported its bombing. What is your response to that? You've been very active against the bombing of Yugoslavia.
Well, you know, first of all, I think that what you have done here is to identify what is a major problem with democracy in America today, and that is the tremendous influence of corporations at every level of government. We understand that, and it's a problem that goes all the way to the top of the national ticket in both parties. We understand that. I don't think that Mr. Cheney is any different in many ways in terms of his philosophy than other people who have been candidates at that level. I do believe that we need to continue our efforts to insist on accountability and on moral principles. We can talk about family values, as everyone likes to talk about. Let's talk about universal human values to permit the evolution of the planet, to permit people to live out their dreams, to permit life to continue on this planet, to permit the ecology of the planet to continue to grow. These are all things that are basic human rights. And actually, you know what? They're even more important than a presidential election. And so we need to continue the effort. NGOs, public citizens out there have to continue our efforts. We're not helpless, and it's not hopeless. You know, I'm not here to testify on behalf of anybody running for office. I'm here to say that members of Congress can make a difference, but we need to stand up and speak out.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, Democrat from Ohio, also Peter Fehrenbach, head of California Peace Action, and on the line with us from New York, Bill Hartung, senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. Check out the New York Times full page ad today from California Peace Action Education Fund. It has a photograph, and it says it's not just a $60 billion lemon, it's also a bomb. It says missile defense is a fraud. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! When we come back, well, we'll find out why hundreds of workers were outside protesting one of Al Gore's major contributors at a hotel in Santa Monica. Stay with us.
I am just an atom, and my story is seldom told. I have squandered nanoseconds on a campaign full of mumbles, such are promises. It's all rhetoric, still a proton likes electrons, and they offered me a deal, oh lie, lie. In the manufactured Cold War, they told me I was the best, that I'd fight for truth and justice, And they sure loved my wave particle duality. I was naive, I agreed to speak with neutrons that were waiting in the hole. I was mighty proud, feeling several angstroms tall. Lie, lie, lie. Just like the sun, except that lots of people die. It's an instrument of peace, except that all it does is be.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez, and we're broadcasting from the Independent Media Center, just a few blocks from the Staples Center, where the Democratic Convention is set to get underway in just a few hours. But ways down the road, there is something else going on. It's a major protest against one of the major Democratic contributors, a local issue here in Los Angeles, which has gained national significance because of the convention this week. The issue of the attempt of workers for the Lowe's hotel chain to unionize. Lowe's is being used as the headquarters for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee during the convention. Interestingly, the chief executive of Lowe's, Jonathan Tisch, is a close personal friend of Al Gore. He's invested more than $150,000 over 2 years to stoke Gore's campaign.
Well, the employees of Lowe's accused Tisch of cracking down on their attempts to unionize the Santa Monica Beach Hotel of the company, and hundreds of workers have been seeking to unionize and are escalating their protest this week. Yesterday, there was a large rally outside of the hotel, and we're joined by two of the people who've been instrumental in that protest. There's Marielena Durazo, who's the president of Local 11 of the Hotel and Restaurant Workers. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about what the battle at Lowe's has entailed up until now and why you felt it necessary to have this demonstration outside the hotel in the middle of the convention?
Well,
at the beginning of the convention.
Well, it's been building over the last couple of months when the workers announced themselves as an organizing committee with the intent to organize a union. And within 48 hours from announcing their intention to organize, the company immediately contracted with a union buster, very notorious union buster in the Los Angeles area, who just a few months before had conducted a campaign in a hotel just down the street on the beach front as well, and where very, very disgusting, dirty tactics were used. So Lowe's hires them within 48 hours to begin to the same barrage to intimidate, to harass those workers. And that's why our actions on the outside have also escalated, because it's our responsibility to make sure that there is a defense, that the workers on the inside know that they have allies and friends on the outside. And that's when we also began to visit politicians, elected officials, to say, and with workers. The workers themselves went to go visit and say, we need you to stand on the side of the workers in this dispute.
Well, it was interesting that there were quite the Democratic National Committee, once you alerted them to this, apparently pulled out some of their activities from the hotel. But you didn't see any of the kind of calls, for instance, to Jonathan Tisch, who is a close friend of Al Gore's. We've been seeing a lot in the news lately about how the Democratic National Committee put a lot of pressure on Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, who was having a fundraiser at the Playboy Mansion, to withdraw it because of how that seemed not to strike the right moral tone. But we had not seen the Democratic National Committee calling on Jonathan Tisch to strike the proper moral tone when it comes to labor in terms of being allowing you to have the best access to workers through a card checkoff system of being able to get a union in. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction to how the party has dealt with this issue?
Well, I think they've started to respond. We had a union rally with Congressman Gephardt a few days ago, in which he publicly announced were the button for the Lowe's and publicly announced the support for the Lowe's workers. And so I think we're starting to get the kind of response. We had about a week ago in the Los Angeles Times an op-ed piece that was written by Congressman Waxman, in which it was very clear that he was taking the side and asking Lowe's to stop the campaign and that they should respect the workers, the right of the workers to organize. So by no means, and we have a number of other congressional and state level officials, and I believe that is what's going to convince all levels of the Democratic Party that they need to live up to the principles of their platform, which is that the workers have a right to organize freely and without intimidation.
Jonathan Tisch, is he a Tisch brother, Lawrence Tisch and Preston Tisch?
Yes.
Which owned Lorillard and all the cigarette companies.
That's right.
And CBS, Lawrence Tisch, long time, though he sold it, long time owner of CBS.
Yes.
Supporter of Al Gore.
Yes.
Fabian Gonzalez, you're a waiter at the Lowe's Hotel. Can you tell us what you do? Can you tell us how much you make, what your life is like at Lowe's?
Well, at Lowe's, I'm a waiter. I've been there a little over 2 years. And I've been there, let's see, 2 years. And what I do there is I'm a part of the member organizing committee, and we're organizing and pretty much getting support from other departments to organize and fight this big corporation. That's
now, the workers there are overwhelmingly Latino, but I also understand that the company that's been brought in, the union-busting firm, is also a Latino-owned firm. What's been the repercussions within the hotel in terms of those who are trying to spearhead the union movement by the management and by this union-busting firm?
Well, the company, anti-union company, is pretty much intimidating and us in different factors. Like me personally, they've attacked me in the cafeteria, and they follow me around, and it seems like management doesn't care if they're walking around in areas where normally customers would not be there. So they're always intimidating and threatening us with that we're going to lose benefits they're going to start charging us for parking and other issues like that.
The union, hotel employees and restaurant employees, is
yes.
that what HERE stands
yes.
for?
Yes.
Is extremely active in Los Angeles. We come from New York, but I hear a lot about HERE. Can you talk about the labor activity in this city that people, I think, around the country don't quite appreciate?
Well, I'm very proud of our union, similar to the Justice for Janitors campaign, in which, you know, it really is the Latino immigrante who works, you know, cleaning, washing the dishes and cleaning those rooms, who are out there on the streets. And now they're out there on the streets for two reasons. First and foremost, to make sure that they get the respect and the dignity for what they contribute as immigrants in this country. And second of all, to begin to organize politically to have a stronger voice and to get that recognition as voters. And we have found that the Latino, the new citizen, the new Latino voter is very much looking to the labor movement because of our activity here in order to deal with the things that they need to be dealt with every single day. They see that the union's out there in a militant way. You know, we're getting arrested. We're marching in the streets. We don't care who owns the hotel that we're fighting with. We'll take on whoever has to be taken on. And so I think that has really led even those immigrant workers who don't have the union yet to see the union movement in the leadership. We saw that, for example, in an event we had on June 10th, because the AFL-CIO reversed the longstanding policy on immigration. And based on that, we had a forum in Los Angeles where we expected maybe 5,000 workers. 20,000 workers showed up, and it was all because they see that the unions are taking the lead with the religious Cardinal Mahoney was there to say, we need the power to change things in the city. We don't have living wages. We don't have health care. Latinos have the highest percentage of, are the highest percentage of workers who work for a living full time and don't have employer paid health insurance.
Mariana, I'd like to ask you, one of the speakers at yesterday's rally was the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who got amazing cheers, as he always does when he speaks. But he's also staying at the Lowy's Hotel. Could you explain that, how that came about?
Well, we, believe it or not, we asked him. We asked him that to the degree he could, if he would remain in the hotel. And that is because the workers really need to be able to see that there's someone who has the courage and who has the reputation that the Reverend has to be in there and have someone to talk to. He could walk through that hotel and talk to every single worker, which he has promised to do. He will meet with them, and he will talk to them about the issues, and he will tell them in ways that are very, very clear that he's standing with them and that he's going to work hard to get others to stand with him, you know, whether it be Tisch or whoever it is, no matter how much money they've given to the Democratic Party, that they have strong allies.
Are you concerned about criticism of the Democratic Party when the Republicans have taken, to say the least, a very staunch anti-union position? And here you are out in force, hundreds of you marching against the Democrats.
Well, I don't see us marching against all the Democrats. I see us marching against a big donor who's active. He's one person in the Democrats who we've clearly, who's clearly now identified as conducting union busting activities. And so what we're going to do is, what we're doing now is, we're demanding of every single Democratic leader to make a choice. Are they going to continue to, you know, support Jonathan Tisch and Lowe's, or are they going to take the side of the workers? And we are making that challenge. We're presenting that challenge to every single Democratic leader.
You know, there is a hospital in New York, Tisch Hospital, New York University Hospital, and those that campaigned against it being named Tisch Hospital campaigned because their money comes from tobacco. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember, I think it's Newport Vantage and True. I'm not exactly sure if those are the three brands of Lorillard. But the ad that went out on radio went something like this by a group called Doctors Who Ought to Care or something. And it said, when they were fighting against the naming of the hospital Tisch, they said, go ahead, smoke Newport Vantage or True. The Tisches have a hospital bed waiting for you. I think something like a quarter or a fifth of the patients in that hospital are suffering from smoking-related diseases. Mm-hmm. Well, that does it for today's program. If people want to find out more about the struggle against Lowe's and Jonathan Tisch, is there a place they can go on the web, or where can they call here, the Hospital Employees Restaurant Employees Union in Los Angeles?
The Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Union, the telephone number is 213-481-8530, and we will be glad to give up more information and to connect with us in terms of how they can be supportive of us. Maybe in New York, those listening in New York, those listening in other parts of the country, we'd love to hear from you and join us in this very, very difficult fight. Thank you.
We have 30 seconds, Fabian Gonzalez. You get the last word.
Well, like I said, we're organizing at the hotel, and it's really important for everybody out there to know that it takes a lot of courage to go in there every day, knowing that this big corporation is very powerful and can stop us. But I believe that we can do it because we have the community and a lot of political support, and we have a great organizing program, and I know we're going to win.
Thank you for being with us. And that does it for today's program, the first from Los Angeles of this week. We will be here every single day. Democracy Now! Broadcast from the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles, Patriotic Hall. Democracy Now! Is produced by Jeremy Scahill. We had help from Deepa Fernandez. Our technical director is Grayson Challenger. Assistance from Sanazma Zafarian and Karen Palmer and Nell Geiser. Video production by Didi Halleck, Skip Lumberg, Linda Ayanna Cohn, John Hamilton. Internet production by Pratap Chatterjee, Lena Hoshina, Derek Chung. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Also, special thanks to Carlos.